There's a minute to look them over. You see anything that is untoward?
Madam Chair, I'd move adoption of the minutes.
Senator Larson moves adoption of the minutes of the hearing of February 26. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. We're going to go a little bit out of, we're going to go out of order in the presentations today for our committee and take up the confirmation hearings of the two members who are present for appointments to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. We invite Ms. Ashmore to the witness table, if you will. Welcome to the committee. If you, we do have your appointment and your some background information about you and the application for the reappointment. But if you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself, we love to hear it.
Certainly. Good afternoon. My name's Terry Ashmore. I am currently working as managing director of the Basilica of St. Mary in Minneapolis. I have served on the board for the past 3 years. Prior to going to work at the Basilica of St. Mary, my career took me in many ways through a political scene in Minnesota. I worked for the Republican House Caucus as their executive director. I worked for the Senate Caucus working on campaigns and elections for their campaign division. Also worked in federal politics, some working for former Congressman Vin Weber and for Congressman Jim Ramstad, managing campaigns, when working in local elections, did things like recruit candidates, help treasurers figure out how to fill out the forms with the for the campaign board. But really my experience was very practical, kind of on the ground. What does it take to be a candidate, and how do you help and comply with the laws and regulations?
And I take it you're one of the Republican appointees.
I am the Republican nominee, yes.
That's no secret about that. Are there questions or comments about the confirmation for Ms. Ashmore? Mr. Watson, I don't have the appropriate motion. Would you let us know what that is again, please?
It would be to move that the committee recommend that the appointment of Terry Ashmore to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be confirmed.
Senator Day?
So move that.
Senator Day moves that the appointment of Ms. Ashmore to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be recommended to and be confirmed. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Congratulations and thank you
very much
for your service. Mr. Milbert. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Milbert, and we are certainly pleased to welcome you, our, for some of us, a former colleague and in the House.
Friend
and we know that you have served a long time on the Campaign Finance Board, and if you would just briefly explain something of your background, too, and your work there, then we will move to a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's great to be back here. I miss being here, but as I said at the House hearing, there are some times that I feel pretty good about not being back here in June and in July. But I served as a member of the South St. Paul City Council for 12 years prior to being elected to the legislature in 1986, and I served in the House of Representatives until 2002. I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty and have served a four-year term on the Campaign Finance Board, and I was a chair of the committee or the Campaign Finance Board during the 2006 election cycle. In addition to that, I am also a member of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, where I have served since 1994. In my private life, I'm in the Culligan business, and I also am active in community affairs. And I would appreciate your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the appointment.
Are there questions, comments for Mr. Milbert? Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I don't have any questions about Mr. Milbert. I think he's a wonderful guy. But questions I have, did you have a lot of complaints after these elections? Have we had a lot of cases? And I'm not interested in any cases itself. I'm just, have we had a lot? How was it in an election? Was it?
Mr. Milbert, if you want to speak generally about that.
Madam Chair and Senator Day, I would say compared to the 2004 election cycle that the number of complaints was down. And I would also tell you, I can't talk about any specific cases, but it seems to me that the number of complaints is down, and I would also say that the allegations that have resulted in what I would consider to be serious violation of the rules have been very minimal. So to the extent that I'm able to talk about it, I would say that it was relatively few complaints during this last cycle.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Day. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I make the motion, I just have to tell you what a great honor it is to make this motion for a good friend, Mr. Milbert, who I had the pleasure of sitting next to for 4 years in the Minnesota House, my first 4 years. And I can just tell you, I just want to tell you a really brief story about one of the first things Representative Milbert said to me when I didn't know him very well, and in my first couple of weeks in the House, and that was Representative Larson, when you go to grab that microphone and stand up to speak, remember that there's 133 other members. There is a possibility that there's one of those other 133 members that knows more about the issue than you do. And that gave me great pause. Representative Milbert.
You went ahead and spoke anyway.
Right? Well, I haven't always adhered to your advice. Probably received some comeuppance for that. But it's a great honor to move that the appointment of Robert Milbert to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be confirmed.
We've heard the motion. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Congratulations, and also thank you for your service.
Madam Chair, it's great to be here and appear before your committee. Thank you very much. And Senator Larson, thank you for the kind words. Thank you.
Thank you. We also are going to be hearing now from the Campaign Finance Board to take a look at the program that they have devised and that some of us use. We'd like to encourage more members to use the Campaign Finance Reporter, which is the reporting system that is on the computer. And in particular, Senator Larson is interested because he does not file his reports electronically. Senator Gerlach, let's see. We might have another convert after this. Senator Day.
We're old dogs.
Senator Day is not electronic. Senator Betzel, you must be.
Madam Chair, I do my own bookkeeping. I manage it. I upload everything, download everything. I know how to operate the
system.
You're
electronic. Okay,
yes,
so that's two out of five. So we hope that you will get convinced here. It's absolutely a splendid program. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm a management analyst with the Campaign Finance Board, and we appreciate the invitation from the chair and committee members to appear here. I will keep the presentation certainly within the 30 minutes that we've been requested and possibly shorter than that, and I will certainly accept questions anytime as we go. Is everybody able to see the screen well enough to make it out? I don't know if it's too bright or not.
Yes, and if members of the audience would like to follow along, I invite you to come and sit on the side rather than in the back there, or to sit where you can see the screen.
Just a bit of historical information. The campaign finance software was a product of the Campaign Finance Board beginning in the late 1990s and was funded by the legislature at that time. The first product was released in 1998 and was, in fact, called Finance 98. And the product has evolved since then, but is essentially the same as it was when it started out. It really serves four functions for treasurers and committees who use it. It is a record-keeping system so that you can keep track of the financial things that you need to know about, particularly to report to the board. But it also allows committees to keep records about people and events that they're involved in that would be for committee purposes rather than for board compliance purposes. Secondly, it's a reporting system. Key features include the reports that are submitted to the board, and it generates those reports. It puts everything in the right spot for you so that the treasurer doesn't have to understand exactly where things should go on a report. If you've done a paper report, you know there are lots of schedules. Using the software puts everything on the right schedule for you. It also includes a lot of user reports that help the treasurer and the candidate manage and operate the committee so that they can know where they are financially at any given time, where they are with regard to limits, special sources, and other financial information they might need to understand. Thirdly, it's a compliance system. About this time in the 1990s, many states were creating campaign finance software, and many of them were simply record-keeping and reporting, and they didn't help the candidates understand the law or even comply with the law. Minnesota's campaign finance system has always been fairly complex, and the board had recognized that most violations were inadvertent, resulting either from a treasurer's misunderstanding or misapplication of a statutory provision, or in some cases even simply mathematical problems of failing to record things or add things up correctly. So it was the board's decision at that time to build compliance assistance into the application. And so the rules of campaign finance, that is the statutes, are actually built into the application so that as a treasurer does the work in the system of entering financial transactions, the treasurer will be told in real time if there's a potential problem with that transaction from a statutory standpoint. Not only is real-time compliance included, but the treasurer can run a report periodically that will tell him or her all of the problems that exist at that time that should have attention before the report is actually filed with the board. I'll mention this later in the presentation, but it should be obvious even at this point that it's very important for the program to be successful that the treasurer uses it on a regular basis and keeps up with the data entry. Finally, the software has never been mandatory, and so when it was written, the board decided we would put in some enhancements or some additional tools that would make it beneficial to a committee to use it, sort of incentives for the committee to use it that would be beneficial to them, even though they have nothing to do with reporting to the board. And those things include the ability to track various attributes of individuals and report or generate mailing or telephone lists based on those attributes, the ability to issue political contribution refund receipts in an automated way, the ability to write thank you letters in an automated way, budgeting, bank reconciliation, and tracking of events and fundraisers. And I'll briefly get into some of those things as the actual demonstration goes on. The campaign finance software is distributed initially in a CD-ROM that we send out to people, and then upgrades are distributed by the Internet. It all starts with the committee, and in this demonstration, I already have a committee set up for our purposes. This is a warning telling me that I have a report that hasn't been filed. That would be the 2006 year end. When you first open the application, you will be presented with what we call the committee maintenance form, which you can see here, and it allows you to enter various information about the committee and tells the software what the committee type is, what the office is, who the candidate is, and these are key features that control the rest of the behavior of the software because based on the office sought, for example, certain limits will be applied during the financial transactions. The candidate name is important because that identifies this particular individual to the application as the candidate and allows the software then to apply special contribution limits to that one person that would be different from anybody else's contribution limits. Also, there is additional information about the committee, largely provided by the board. For example, here's the system data that shows the various report due dates. This is for the 2006 year. Data about the candidate. This is data directly out of the board's own files. It tells us this candidate is an incumbent official, had a primary election opponent, and won the primary. tells when this candidate filed various documents with the board, and then it tells what this particular candidate's limits are. And in a moment, I'll tell you how the application gets that information. Also, you might note that on this page, we keep year-to-date totals. So the campaign expenditure year-to-date is $250 for this candidate. Special source contribution limit is getting toward the limit at over $5,800. The application communicates with the board through a process called downloading or uploading. Downloading is getting data from the board, and the data that comes from the board are three things. One, the list of all the PACs, lobbyists, principal campaign committees, and party units that are registered with the board. We provide that data so that you don't have to enter it yourself, and also so that it comes through in a standardized way that the board will be able to recognize those transactions when they're sent back. Also, committee-specific file, that's that data about your own committee, whether you have a public subsidy agreement, whether you filed for office, and so on. And finally, another piece of information that we send is a service pack, which is a method of automatically updating or correcting any report structures that are in the application or used by the application. And this download process is relatively transparent to the committee. It does have to be initiated by the treasurer, and we recommend it's done about once a month, more frequently when things are changing, like filings for office are occurring and data about your own committee might be changing. I'd like to point out that unlike some software, this software never does a transfer of data to or from your committee except when that transfer is initiated by the treasurer. So you do downloads periodically, and then when report filing is due, you initiate a transfer of your limited, a limited subset of your data back to the board. Once the committee is set up and operating, probably the key group of things that we work with in the application are called entities, and this includes not only the PACs and party units and other candidate committees, but also people, both people who are lobbyists and people who are not lobbyists. And if we look at what's in the software right now, we'll see lots of entities. We'll see PCCs for principal campaign committees, lobbyists, party units. These are all the things that were provided in the download from the board. We'll also see individuals that were created by the user. So the only thing the user needs to enter into the system are those people who are not lobbyists and businesses that they do business with. I'm just going to look at a particular entity, for example, and this will be John Doe. This is an entity that I created, but you can see we have the name and address. We have a place for the employment information. We also have an individual profile. This is one of the features I mentioned where you can track information about people. We've flagged this person as being a member of our committee. Also, two other items. They responded to our mailing number one, and they attended our July fundraiser. Later on, I'll show you a little bit more about these profile elements. But the first group comes with the software, and the next 18 can be set up by the individual treasurer or committee to be any type of attributes that you might want to track about a person. And then when you flag these attributes, you can use them to select out of your database for letter writing, telephone call list generation, or any other purpose that you might want to use. We also very important with individuals is the concept of husband and wife, because in campaign finance, very often contributions come from on joint checks from husband and wives, and the treasurer knows that the people intend that to be a joint check. And so for reporting purposes, you want that to be typically split between the two people, because if it's, say, more than $250 in an election year, that prevents it from being in the special sources. And yet, for letter writing and PCR purposes, you want that to be treated as a single contribution. And so the software supports the concept of a spouse, which links two individuals together for those purposes. And we can see on John Doe here by looking at what's called the individual info tab, we have the spouse information here. The spouse is Jane Doe. So those two people are already connected. If we looked at Jane Doe, we would see that she is connected to John Doe as the spouse. I'm going to just show you a little bit about creating spouses because it is important, and so we have a couple of ways to do it. The first one I'm going to do is, again, with an entity that I have created, Roger Rowe, If we look at individual info, though, there is no spouse created for this person. And so I'm sitting here as a treasurer with a check from Roger Rowe and his spouse, and I want to create that link before I enter the check. I happen to know in this case that the spouse is already in the application and the spouse is married. So all I had to do was click the lookup button by the spouse and select Mary, and now those two are linked. And I'll show you later how those are used then in a transaction. Another way to do that, and again, I will just look up an existing person. This is a person whose spouse is not already in the application. We have a simple way of creating that person's spouse with the Create Spouse button. And if you watch what happens, you'll see everything is copied over to the new form except the first name, and I can just put the spouse's first name in and click OK, and that creates the second individual and links them together. Just to confirm that, there's John Aberg and the spouse then, Karen, who was already there. Now those people can be used in transactions and easily split their joint contributions for reporting purposes while maintaining that link for thank you letters and PCRs. In the software, record keeping and compliance are closely tied together because compliance is almost always related to a fundraising or a funding transaction of some sort. And as I mentioned before, the effectiveness of the compliance in the application really relates to is dependent on two things. First of all, it's dependent on the timeliness of the treasurer's data entry into the application. We recommend that treasurers not put off for more than 30 days data entry into the application. If you follow the board's findings on a very close basis, you may have seen findings occasionally that say there is this violation that the treasurer discovered when they entered the data into the campaign finance software. Unfortunately, in those cases, it was more than 60 days after the receipt, so it was too late to return it. But if you're doing these things on a regular basis, the software will tell you that there's a problem, and you can correct it while there's still time. The other thing that the treasurer has to do is take care both to learn the system and to use it correctly. One example I might mention that's kind of probably the most common is to record a contribution from an individual and then later get another contribution from that same person and not look carefully to see that you've already created that person, create a new person with really the same name and record the contribution. The system thinks it's two separate people and that could result in a limits violation that you wouldn't be aware of. We do provide training. We'll be scheduling training once we get through this questionable weather. So in the spring and through the summer, there will be training for the software. And, of course, it doesn't cost anything to attend. And we post those things on our website. The first thing that people tend to do is record receipts. And so that's the top menu item. And when we tab into the receipt type, what we've done is we've limited the number of receipt types. And really, these are the only ways that a committee can receive money. And we've organized them in the order that they're typically used. So contribution from an individual is typically the most common contribution. I'm going to do one from Roger Rowe and his spouse. So when I type into the source field, all I have to do is type in ROE, R, and there's Roger, so I can select. I'm going to say this is a $500 contribution and give it a date. Now, I'm going to tell the application. Now, if I just saved it right now, it would be a $500 contribution for Roger Rowe. I know he has a spouse and it's on the check, so here's the joint contribution. We click that button and click on the joint source to verify who the joint source is, and it's Mary. That's correct. And what's happened is the application automatically split the contribution into $250 from Mary and $250 from Roger. And when I click OK, first of all, here's an example of the compliance system. The first thing it tells me is this is Mary Rowe. Employment information is required because she's contributed more than 100. I don't have it. If I had it, I could go back and put it in now, but I can ignore it. Same thing for Roger, and I can ignore that. We do allow you to ignore problems. We hope that you'll go back and fix them later, although the software, the decision was made that just like a paper filer, you can file a report that would result in violations. So you could file a report with missing employment information just like a paper filer can, but you will know about it when you're doing it. Just to show what happened, I'll quick go over to the board reports and we'll preview the A1, which is the contributions received report. And these are alphabetical, of course. And there's Mary Rowe and Roger Rowe, each with the $250 that resulted from that split contribution. There are other contributions there, too. I prepared this committee with a number of pre-recorded transactions for demonstration purposes. I'm going to just demonstrate just two other contribution receipts. This one will be a contribution from a political committee or fund. And we'll make it $500, which is a limit. And we'll click OK to save it, and this is for the purpose of illustrating another feature. With this contribution, the committee is over its limit for contributions from special sources. That's really an important issue for candidates, is this special source contribution limit, the limit from PACs, lobbyists, and large givers. I'm going to ignore this. Now, what the treasurer might want to do at this point is go to one of the user reports, and that is the report of special source contributions, to find out what's going on, especially if the treasurer thinks that's wrong, as sometimes they do. And this will show you exactly what contributions have gone into that special source limit, so you can look and see which ones you might be able to return or which large givers you might be able to reduce somewhat to take them out of the large giver category. This is one of the user reports that's provided as a benefit for the treasurer to assist in the management of the committee.
Mr. Goldsmith, you know, one of the things I find occasionally that is frustrating is sometimes checks from political committees do not match the name that they're known by, and but their check will have their registration number on it. And what I'm not able to do is to forget about what they call themselves, but to do a search and find based on the registration number.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a feature that you thought about including so that, I mean, I have search and search and search because sometimes Minnesota is spelled out on your records. Sometimes it's M-I-N-N. Sometimes it's M-N. And depending on how they register with the board is how they are put up in the campaign finance reporter. But they may not, their checks might not look like that at all. However, their registration number is going to be the same. And it gets very time-consuming sometimes. And sometimes it's impossible to find them because their name, instead of saying the Minnesota group, it might actually be the group of Minnesota. But their check will say Minnesota group. And you never can find them except by happenstance.
That's right, Madam Chair, and in some cases the name isn't even similar on the check.
Exactly.
The system actually does accommodate that if they have the number on the check, and that's a problem that often they don't even have the number on the check. But actually, I haven't mentioned it, but there's a registration number field here. If you select the source, that is a feedback field, but actually you can type the number 40942, for example, into that field, and it will then pull up the committee that has that registration number.
Oh, really?
That works for lobbyists as well. So if they provide the registration number, the easiest way is to do that. And then if it looks still odd, like the name doesn't match at all, you may want to give the board a call. But that is a way to do it if they provided the registration number.
Oh, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Goldsmith?
Yes.
Can't you also go into the database, hit the look button, and then can you sort by the number? Is that possible?
Unfortunately, we do not have registration number in the lookup field.
Okay.
So you can sort. When you're doing a lookup, you can sort on any of the fields that we show here. I'm looking at contributions. You would go to the entity. Maybe we do. Yes, I think we do. In the entity table.
Yeah.
And then if you click this find by, typically people are going to use the find by typing in the last name.
Yeah.
It says find by name. But you can click this, and then it says find by reg number. And it not only does it sort by registration number, but you can type in 40942.
Okay, I didn't realize it.
And it will find it. So you can actually sort on any of these columns and find by any of these columns.
I should probably go to refresher rather than trying to figure it out
some
myself.
Of these things are covered in the basic class, and then some of them are covered in the advanced class. And we're definitely going to be really emphasizing training during the remainder, the second half of this year. I'm just going to bring up one other receipt just to show you. This is one that's already recorded. This is to Sign Printers. This is a receipt from a group called Sign Printers Incorporated. And when we save this one, it just gives you a couple more compliance examples. First, this may be from a corporation, which would be prohibited by statute. We recognize that that's 211B, but we still give the warning because it's a benefit to the treasurer to know that. If they ignore that, then we also say it may be prohibited because it's an unregistered association. That's a 10A prohibition. So, again, we try to give the treasurer as much feedback and capture as many potential violation problems as we can, and I think we're almost 100%. I believe we are 100% successful if the application is used correctly in being able to trap those potential violations. The other transaction that's commonly used is expenditures. I'll just do one to give an example to the U.S. Postmaster for $1,000. We'll use July 15th, and we're going to call this postage, of course. And session wrap up. And we'll say this is a non-campaign disbursement for constituent services. This is a session wrap up. When we save this contribution, it is going to give a compliance message that just explains the constituent services rule for the period after the session so that the treasurer is aware of the rule and can be sure they're in compliance with the 50-50 split. The application
in a campaign year.
In an election year, yes. This is in a non-election year and in an election year. It's two different ways, but yes. Contributions are fairly straightforward. Simply select the type of entity. A contribution is a donation to another registered entity. You select the type of entity and the recipient and the amount and save it. If you try to give money to another principal campaign committee, you'll get a little warning about what the requirements are for doing that with regard to termination, for example. I mentioned compliance happens while the user is entering data. Compliance also happens when a batch compliance report is run, which we're doing right now. It goes through and it checks every transaction, every receipt and expenditure and loan and anything else in the application, and then prints the treasurer a report of all the possible things. Here's a principal campaign committee donation and employment information, employment, unregistered association, and so on. So this is a tool that the treasurer then can use to go back over all these transactions, find the employment information, get missing addresses, and so on. The reporting function really is twofold. First of all is the board reports, and this is fairly straightforward. You can select and print preview any schedules from the board report. We already did the A1, for example. This is the committee transaction summary. And you will see then at that moment in time exactly what is going to be reported to the board. And this will be what you will probably print and save. And this will be exactly then what the board prints and publishes on its end. The second part of board reports is to actually create and file a board report. I won't do that as part of the demonstration, but the treasurer fills in and certifies and then clicks the Create Report button. And there's some misconception out there with a few people that somehow you are sending us your database when you file a board report. That's not what's happening. This Create Board Report actually takes a lot of computer code and does a lot of extractions out of your database to sum up and extract unitemized contributions and put them in one place to extract the itemized information, to do all the totals necessary for the summary, and puts that into a separate database which resides on your computer, and then it's that separate database that's sent to the board, and is used to generate the reports. For this same reason, when I get calls from people who've had computer crashes on their hard drive and say, well, I just did the report, can't you just send it back to me so I can keep going? No, we don't have, first of all, it's not in the same format that it would be on your hard drive, and secondly, it's not the same data. We could maybe generate a list of contributors, of itemized contributors, but that's about all we could do. I also already mentioned a couple of user reports. The special source report is an important one. Another report that's used quite a lot is the treasurer's contribution report. As you know, with a board report, there's this chunk at the bottom that says unitemized contributions. A lot of times treasurers are trying to figure out what's in those unitemized contributions. So we've done a version of that report for treasurers that has, first of all, the first section is the itemized contributions, and then at the bottom is the detail of contributions that will be unitemized on the board report. So you can see the list of what went into that total that we get as a chunk when you file your report. The main board report.
You can do that with expenditures too, can you not?
Say that again.
Expenditures as well?
I don't think we have that out there yet. It's on the list of enhancements to be put out, so that will be available. We have a long list of enhancements and minor fixes that we'll be putting out probably toward the third quarter. There'll be a release with some enhancements. And if people know of things that they want or need that aren't there, feel free to call us. The end-of-day report is the main report. You can select by date range, by amount, by type of transaction that you want. And in fact, we also have the concept of projects. You can select by a project, like your July fundraiser. And if I do that, I print preview, and I will see only those transactions that I linked to my July fundraiser. When I make expenditures, I can tie them to a project, and when I get receipts, I can tie them to a project, and then I can report on that project so you can see how your fundraisers did. Just a couple final things I'll point out without getting into detail. The application does support the use of the Secretary of State's data. The Secretary of State puts out a CD-ROM with district, congressional district, and so on, and voting history for 7 years. You can import that data into your system, you can leave those entities in, or you can use that voting history to generate mailing lists. So if you want to get whoever voted in the last two general elections, for example. Because that's a lot of data, we also have an easy way to remove that Secretary of State data from your system once you're done using it. The software also allows budgeting, and it allows the issuance of PCRs. I would like to show that. All automatic and built in. You just click PCR receipts, print preview, and it will generate a PCR for everybody that's qualified in your system. That means an individual who resides or who is an eligible voter in Minnesota. Once you print the PCRs, it asks you if you want to update the receipts to save the number that it issued, and if you click yes, it will do that, and then it won't print those again. And finally, you can print thank you letters. I've created a thank you letter here. The letter is built by using pull-downs to select variables like name and address and the amount of the receipt and the date. You can use selection criteria, which in this case is going to be really, it just says anybody who hasn't already got a thank you letter. And then you preview, and these are the thank you letters customized to each of those people who met the criteria that you set up.
Have you ever thought of putting the contribution refund form from the Department of Revenue on your website or in Campaign Finance Reporter?
We haven't been requested to put it in the application. It certainly would be something that I think could be done if we're comfortable that revenue isn't going to change the form.
That would be very convenient rather than either having to go out and go to the department's website if you run out of them. Yeah. Or have to copy them.
Now, we do have committees who don't use our PCR form or thank you letter, but create their own custom letter that incorporates the PCR form and a thank you letter onto one page. Mm-hmm. It's quite flexible to be able to do almost anything you want, including importing of graphics and custom text into the letter form. I have maybe a minute or so for questions, if anybody has any.
Are there any questions for Mr. Goldsmith? It's really a system that's come a long way. I've used it, even though clearly there's still things that I am experimenting with it to try and to do. But I've used it since it first came out, and just I wouldn't consider doing my reports without it. So those of you that don't use it, and I guess it was only Senator Betzel and me. Senator Lurie, do you use it?
Absolutely.
Oh, and Senator Lurie used it. It's Senator Larson that we need to convince. Senator Roebling, you need to get with the program here.
We have good staff support
on
a one-to-one basis. I'm there most of the time, and that's one of my principal jobs. We released a new version.
Always return my phone calls and sit with me as we go over whatever it is that I've done wrong or made an error on, and they're very, very helpful.
Thank you.
I mean, I really mean that. Just excellent. Any further questions? And I congratulate Ms. Olson for her leadership in this regard, too. Any questions or comments for Campaign Finance Board, Mr. Goldsmith, Mr. Sigerson? Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
There being no further business before the committee, we are going to adjourn, but the election subcommittee will meet immediately. We have a long agenda. Senator Larson will be chairing. We stand adjourned.